Welcome to Integration Excellence, the podcast around enterprise integration and interface management. We explore topics related to integration in the SAP world and beyond. My name is Adam Kivon. I'm an SAP integration expert, book author, trainer, and founder of White Paper Interface Design. Enjoy. Yeah, welcome to another episode of Integration Excellence. Today I'm alone. Actually, Sebastian is on a well-deserved vacation for, I think, a longer time, following a lot of weeks with many, many appointments, conferences, meetings. And so I took the chance to, you know, record a session just by myself and with some technical help. We will see that soon. But maybe some news. Let's just start with some news first. So we have been invited by SAP for the SAP Integration Modernization Series. So there is a, you know, there are a couple of, you know, sessions that are taking place, organized by SAP, you know, with SAP speakers, but also with partners like us. So we've been invited, and now we've been hosting a session regarding the integration cockpit for strategy alignment and insights with SAP Integration Suite. This will be on the 17th of July. So I will be, you know, you will see this in the show notes where you can register. And I hope you all will be there to listen to, you know, the newest governance aspect of the integration cockpit along with SAP Integration Suite. Yeah, so what's new besides that? So as I mentioned, Sebastian had a lot of, you know, conferences to attend. So he was on the in the Integrate event in London. I guess next time when we speak or when we have a session together, he will speak about the Integrate event in London again or more in detail. But following that event in the same week, on the 12th of June, was the Aviators Germany event in Hamburg. And this time it was focusing a lot on Microsoft technologies. There were also a lot of Microsoft colleagues there. So this time not so much SAP presence, but more focus on Microsoft, which is fine, which was also interesting for me to learn. And there was one session, one of the last sessions. It was really great. There was a speaker mentioning Notebook LM, and he was mentioning it casually like, oh, yeah, both. Actually, most of you probably know Notebook LM. So I've shared with you my Notebook LM, notebook. Yeah, here's the QR code, and then you can scan. So I looked into it, and I then realized what is the potential behind. So actually, Notebook LM is a tool from Google that allows you to, you know, you can feed it with a lot of sources, yeah, knowledge sources. You can, put some websites, some you know, where else, some upload some documents, yeah, some PDFs, and then you feed it, and then you can interact with the notebook, basically, yeah. You can ask questions like, I didn't understand this chapter. Can you please explain more? Or I didn't do, you know, it also brings together several sources, generates a mind map for you. But so this is really cool, really interesting. But what was mind blowing for me was the fact that you can actually upload, you know, a PDF document, like a book, an entire book. And then this book gets, you know, an audio summary is generated. And the summary is generated in a way that two people talk to each other as if this was a podcast episode, yeah, discussing the content in a very, very great quality. So I was, you know, doing this for fun. I just, you know, uploaded my book. I will speak about it in a second. So actually, it's this book here. Can you read it? Hopefully, yeah. So those are one you watch it on YouTube. You see the book is SAP Interface Management Guide on SAP Press, which was, you know, the print version got stopped. Yeah. So the English version of the book is not printed anymore. And I received a lot of copies of the book as one of the authors, which I can use now to distribute. So call to action for all of you who live in Germany, yeah, to just, you know, reduce the costs for shipping. Get in touch with me if you want to have a copy of the book for free, maybe just, you know, for some shipping costs. I will be happy to send it to you. Will be also in the show notes. Yeah, contact me via LinkedIn, via email, whatever, and you will get your SAP Press book, SAP Interface Management Guide. So back to Notebook LM. What I did was I uploaded the book. I hope I didn't break any copyright rules here, into Notebook LM, and clicked on, yeah, generate an audio summary for me in a long version, and then I waited. Yeah, so then I stopped in the evening. I went back and then I checked the content, and I was surprised. It generated 65 minutes of audio, and I was like, wow, there is a lot. Okay, it's a long book, so it's a lot of content. And then I was reading every single, I was listening to every single minute of the book, and I was blown away. This is really next generation AI that is coming to us here. It's like you listen to experts, to enterprise integration experts that talk about the book and, you know, even have conclusions about the content. It's amazing. So I couldn't have summarized the book in a better way. High level, you know, it's about integration strategy. It's about integration technologies. It's about governance. It's about ISRM. Yeah. The methodology of SAP. It provides a lot of, you know, it's a good guide for hybrid integration landscapes in the SAP ecosystem. And it's still up to date. So actually it was written 2021. And now after, 4 years, apparently this is normal that the book, gets out of, the delivery and the paper version. So, but most of it, it's really, really up to date still. Yeah. So it's not really that this is old stuff and then, you know, there is a lot of new stuff. No, it's mainly, focusing still about, you know, SAP integration suite, but also covering process orchestration, basically the entire tech stack of SAP, including, event mesh. I think even also advanced event mesh. So yeah, really, really, good stuff. And yeah, I will now basically hand over to my two colleagues who will be guiding you through this book. Steve and Alex, yeah, they will be talking to you about the book, and they will explain you, what is the guide about, what is the content about, and chapter by chapter, you will be following this. So, enjoy the content, and I'm happy about your feedback. And again, reach out to me if you want to have a copy of the book, if you live in Germany, so I will be able to send it to you. See you next time.
Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take complex topics, all your best sources, and distill them into the most essential insights.
Yeah, exactly.
Think of it as your shortcut to truly understanding what's going on, maybe with a few aha moments along the way.
Okay.
Today, we're tackling a topic that's really foundational to how modern businesses operate. I mean, especially those leveraging the powerful SAP ecosystem. Mm. Imagine an enterprise where every system, every application talks to each other flawlessly, sharing data, triggering processes, creating a truly unified digital operation.
Sounds like the dream,
right? It really does. Well, that's the ultimate goal of SAP Interface Management. And today we're going to sort of pull back the curtain on how companies are trying to achieve it.
From the early days right up to the bleeding edge.
Exactly. From its humble beginnings to, the bleeding edge of cloud connectivity.
That's right. This deep dive into SAP Interface Management will, hopefully, provide a comprehensive roadmap, you know, for navigating the typical challenges in integrating systems both within and beyond SAP. It really is about connecting diverse applications, enabling those seamless business processes, and just ensuring data flows smoothly across an organization.
It's critical.
It is. It's no exaggeration to say that without effective interface management, the digital enterprise just, it grinds to a halt.
So our mission for you today is to unpack the core concepts, the evolving technologies, the critical methods, and even the organizational shifts required to really master interface management in an SAP environment.
That's over quite a bit.
Yeah. We'll look at the fascinating evolution of SAP's integration strategies, explore the different architectural styles that dictate how systems talk to each other.
Mm-hmm, the patterns.
Dive into the key technologies that make it all happen, and then see how organizations are structuring themselves to tackle these, well, immense challenges.
It takes structure.
Get ready to gain a crystal clear understanding of what's often seen as a very complex, maybe behind the scenes part of enterprise IT.
But absolutely essential.
Absolutely essential to business agility and innovation. Okay, let's unpack this, right? Let's start with the absolute basics. When we talk about integration in this context, what does that really mean? You know, beyond just connecting two things.
Well, at its core, integration is about enabling diverse applications to communicate and exchange information.
Okay.
But it's not just a simple data transfer. It's about moving data and triggering processes across different systems to achieve some kind of unified business outcome.
Ah, okay. The process triggering is key.
It is. The guide highlights its evolution from, you know, simply connecting systems to becoming a fundamental enabler of digitalization.
Right.
Imagine it like a highly coordinated digital orchestra. When one instrument plays a note, all the other relevant instruments know when and how to respond, ensuring a cohesive flow of operations. The critical takeaway here, I think, is that integration is really the central nervous system of any modern digital enterprise.
That's a great analogy, the central nervous system. So it's not about isolated systems, but this whole network working in concert.
Precisely.
And our sources show us a fascinating evolution in how SAP has approached this, starting way back with SAP R3. How did integration needs and methods evolve as SAP's core systems changed over time?
Initially, SAP R3 focused on tightly integrated monolithic components, things like finance, logistics, HR.
Right, the big modules.
Exactly. Imagine it as a single massive application where most information exchange happened internally.
Okay.
For instance, intermediate documents, or IDocs, were used to send messages between different R3 systems, maybe in separate plants or something.
Mm-hmm.
This was a form of point-to-point connection, but importantly, it was all contained within a largely homogeneous SAP landscape.
Right, all SAP talking to SAP.
Pretty much. The focus was on optimizing internal communication within that unified environment, almost like a self-contained ecosystem.
And IDocs are still very much in use today, right? It's fascinating how some foundational technologies just persist.
Oh, indeed they are. They're regularly used in SAP environments, which really shows the longevity and, you know, the enduring utility of these technologies.
Yeah.
Even as the landscape around them has dramatically shifted, their ability to handle asynchronous data exchange, particularly for B2B, business-to-business scenarios, has kept them incredibly relevant for decades.
Wow. Okay. And then came what SAP called its new dimension products. This led to a significant shift towards heterogeneous landscapes.
Yes.
This sounds like where things really started to broaden out, introducing a whole new level of complexity.
That's exactly it. Yeah. The early 2000s saw SAP introducing products like SAP BW, the business warehouse, to extend R3's capabilities beyond just its core transactional processes.
Right, for analytics.
Exactly. And this era coincided with major business trends like best-of-breed software selection.
Ah, yeah, picking the best tool for each job.
Right. Companies would pick the absolute best application for each specific need rather than sticking to one vendor.
Mm-hmm.
And you also had a surge in mergers and acquisition.
Mm-hmm. Lots of M&A back then.
Both of these developments led to IT landscapes that were no longer homogeneous. They were a mix of different systems from various vendors.
A real patchwork.
Yeah, and this significantly increased the demand for robust interfaces to connect these disparate systems. It created a much more complex and, frankly, sprawling integration challenge for IT departments.
This is where SAP NetWeaver stepped in then, as a technology layer supporting service-oriented architecture. I remember NetWeaver being a huge strategic push.
It was. NetWeaver aimed to provide a comprehensive technology platform for integration, serving as a middleware to connect these diverse systems following SOA principles.
Okay.
It was designed to be the unifying layer. However, its role isn't quite as central today.
Right.
SAP strategy has evolved to the SAP Business Technology Platform, or BTP.
BTP.
Which combines elements of NetWeaver with strategic acquisitions like Business Objects and others. So while NetWeaver laid crucial groundwork, BTP is the modern incarnation of that vision.
Yep.
It encompasses much broader capabilities, application development, analytics, intelligent technologies, all underpinned by integration.
And finally, we arrive at SAP S/4HANA, the current generation with its on-premise and cloud versions.
Yes.
This feels like the culmination of this evolution. How has S/4HANA truly changed the integration game? What's the fundamental shift here that companies really need to grasp?
Well, SAP S/4HANA, as the successor to SAP ERP, relies very heavily on integration as a core design principle. It's not an afterthought.
Okay.
The way companies extend S/4HANA functionality has become much more modular. Extensions are now broadly categorized as in-app.
Right, inside the core system.
Yeah, customizing user interfaces, database fields, ABAP logic directly within the system,
mm-hmm.
and then side by side.
Using BTP.
Exactly, using SAP BTP and the SAP Cloud SDK for external developments that sit alongside the core. The key insight here, I believe, is that companies can no longer treat integration as an add-on.
Mm.
It's now a foundational design principle. It demands a proactive, strategic approach to API management and modular extensions right from day one.
So it changes how IT operates.
It fundamentally changes how IT departments need to operate.
Mm-hmm.
You shift from customizing a monolith to integrating a collection of interconnected services.
Okay, so integration isn't just tacked on. It's baked into the very core of S/4HANA.
Pretty much, yes.
Now, the source talks about SAP trying to centralize integration with libraries like the SAP API Business Hub.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the silver bullet? Does it solve the complexity problem, or is it, you know, more nuanced?
It's definitely more nuanced. Not entirely a silver bullet, no.
Okay.
While SAP is making tremendous strides to centralize and standardize API offerings through platforms like the SAP API Business Hub,
uh-huh.
and they're making progress.
Right.
These libraries aren't yet complete. They cover only a portion of the vast SAP ecosystem.
Okay.
So you might still find individual integration options for, say, non-ABAP SAP applications like SAP Cloud for Customer
right.
that exist outside of these central hubs. And this raises a really important question for organizations. How do you keep track of all these different integration options, both the centralized ones and the individual ones, and ensure consistency across your entire IT landscape?
Yeah, that sounds like a major challenge.
It's a constant challenge to maintain a comprehensive, up-to-date view of all your digital connections.
That leads us directly to the classic challenges of interface management then. What are the classic questions and primary issues organizations face when trying to sort of tame this beast of connectivity and ensure their digital orchestra plays in harmony?
Well, the guide highlights several critical challenges. First, just choosing the right tool for a specific integration use case, given the plethora of options available.
Yeah, analysis paralysis.
Exactly. It's easy to get stuck there. Second, effectively operating the chosen integration platform, ensuring its stability, performance, security. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Third, designing the organization itself to efficiently manage interfaces. This includes defining clear roles and responsibilities. Who owns what?
The people side.
Very much the people side. And finally, ensuring the security, monitoring, and control of all integration processes. Because if data isn't flowing correctly or securely, your business is at risk.
Absolutely.
Employees in this field, they need a broad and constantly evolving skill set. It includes deep technical expertise, sure, but also knowledge of project management approaches, agile versus waterfall.
Right.
And familiarity with frameworks like SAP's Integration Solution Advisory Methodology, ISAM, and the concept of integration competency centers.
We'll get into those later.
Yeah. The primary organizational issues really revolve around having the right skills, the necessary cross-functional knowledge, and the appropriate structures to manage this broad and often rapidly changing spectrum of integration challenges effectively.
It sounds truly multidisciplinary.
It is. It combines technology, process, and people.
Okay, let's get into the nitty-gritty of how systems communicate then. The source breaks down several key architectural patterns. Let's start with what sounds simplest, point-to-point. But is it really that simple in practice?
Well, on the surface, it seems simple.
Yeah.
The point-to-point topology directly connects two applications, and that gives development teams direct control over that specific integration.
Feels straightforward.
For a very limited number of connections, yes. However, what's fascinating and quickly problematic here is its rapid increase in complexity as the number of interfaces grows.
Ah.
The guide explicitly states that with N applications, you can have up to N2, and 1 bidirectional interfaces.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is. For example, with just 4 applications, you could have 6 bidirectional interfaces. With 10 applications, you're looking at 45.
45 connections to manage.
Exactly. This scales extremely poorly. It quickly becomes a tangled mess, or what some people call spaghetti integration.
Right, I've heard that term.
That's why it's rarely used as a central architecture today. An example given is IDOC distribution between individual clients of a local SAP system that's a contained specific use case, not a broad architectural strategy.
So the takeaway is simplicity for 2 becomes complexity for many. So point-to-point is clearly a non-starter beyond just a couple of systems. It becomes that spaghetti integration. What was the next logical step to try and untangle that mess? How did the approach change? This leads us to hub and spoke, right?
Yes, the hub and spoke architecture was designed to solve that exact problem. It introduces a central message-oriented middleware, the hub or message broker, to decouple senders and receivers.
Okay, a central point.
Right. Instead of every application connecting to every other, they all connect to the central hub.
Ah, okay.
This significantly reduces the number of interfaces down to N for N applications. So it's far more manageable when you're integrating, say, 4 or more applications.
Much cleaner topology.
Much cleaner. It often uses a canonical data model.
What's that exactly?
That means all data moving through the hub is translated into one universal standardized language or format, no matter which application sent it or which one will receive it.
Like a central translator.
Exactly. Think of it like a central translator, ensuring everyone speaks the same standardized dialect when communicating via the hub. It eliminates the need for every system to understand every other system's unique language.
Makes sense.
It's also typically asynchronous, where messages are sent and processed at different times, which can improve overall system resilience.
But that central hub, that immediately flags a critical dependency. For a large enterprise, that kind of single point of failure sounds like a potential nightmare.
You're absolutely right to flag that.
How do companies mitigate that? Or is it just a trade-off?
It's a major concern. If the central hub goes down, all integrated systems that rely on it are affected. That impacts business continuity.
Yeah.
Organizations typically mitigate this through robust high availability and disaster recovery strategies for the hub itself, essentially building in redundancy.
Okay, so backups and failovers.
Right. Also, while it reduces connection numbers, it can still centralize development complexity on that single hub. You need highly skilled teams to manage all the transformations and routings in one place.
Ah, okay.
So it's a trade-off. Simpler overall topology, but a single point of operational and developmental concentration.
And then we have the Enterprise Service Bus, or ESB, architecture. How does this differ from hub and spoke? Is it just a more robust version, or is there a fundamental design shift?
The ESB builds on the decoupling idea, but takes it a step further. It actually distributes integration activities across multiple systems rather than centralizing all processing on a single hub.
Oh, okay. Distributed processing.
Yes. Imagine it as a distributed network where the integration bus serves as the intelligent link between systems for communication.
Mm-hmm.
A key advantage is enhanced cyclability and reliability because integration processes can run across several systems or nodes, not just one central server.
More resilient then.
More resilient. All applications connect to the ESB, and transformation and routing rules are stored in a central service repository, but the execution of these rules can be distributed.
I see.
This makes it more resilient and adaptable to growing workloads compared to a strict hub and spoke model. It's about decentralizing the execution while still maintaining centralized governance.
Next, we move to service-oriented architecture, or SOA. This was a massive buzzword a few years back.
Oh, yes.
Often associated with building modular, reusable enterprise systems. What did SOA promise and what were its challenges?
SOA emphasizes reusability, loose coupling, and encapsulation of services. The core idea is that services are independent, platform agnostic, and designed for multiple uses across the enterprise.
Like Lego blocks for business processes.
That's a great way to put it. Lego blocks that can be combined and recombined to form complex business processes rather than building everything from scratch every time.
Okay.
The guide notes that SOA fosters collaboration by promoting a common language and understanding across different business functions and IT teams as everyone is working with defined services.
Right.
However, due to that service decoupling, the initial implementation effort and complexity are higher than simpler architectures.
More upfront work.
Yes, and initial investments in design and infrastructure can be substantial. It's really a strategic long-term play, demanding significant upfront planning and commitment to see the benefits.
And finally, the microservices architecture. This feels very modern, a huge topic in cloud native development today. How does it compare to SOA? Are they just different names for similar things, or is there a fundamental divergence?
Well, they're related, but microservices are a more granular evolution, I'd say.
Okay.
Microservices are smaller, more focused services. They're often designed to perform specific tasks within a single application.
Right, a smaller scope.
Whereas SOA services are typically larger and broader, focusing on company-wide integration. A key distinction is data storage.
How so?
In microservices, each service can have its own data storage.
Sure.
This offers greater autonomy and reduces dependencies between services.
Oh, okay.
SOA, on the other hand, typically shares data stores across multiple services.
Hmm.
For communication, microservices usually communicate via a lightweight API layer, while SOA often uses an ESB. The guide highlights the visual of splitting a monolith, a large, tightly coupled application, into distinct, independent microservices.
Breaking down the giant.
Exactly. This aims to increase flexibility and reusability at a much finer grain, allowing teams to develop and deploy services independently, which is a hallmark of modern agile development. It's really about specialization and autonomous teams.
Okay, so that covers the main architectures. The sources then classify integration scenarios into different styles. This feels like a very practical way to categorize how systems interact beyond just their underlying architecture. What are these styles?
Yeah, it's a helpful categorization. The guide, following SAP's Integration Solution Advisory Method, or ICAM, distinguishes five key styles.
Five styles, okay.
Process-oriented, data-oriented, integration of user interfaces, UIs, integration of things, and cross-style integration.
Right.
Each has unique characteristics, triggers, and requirements. Understanding these styles helps an organization choose the right technologies and design patterns for specific business needs, ensuring the solution fits the problem.
Let's start with process-oriented integration. This sounds like it's all about the flow of business end-to-end.
That's a good way to put it. This style connects applications or companies for the execution of end-to-end business processes.
Okay.
The trigger is typically an event within a business process. A classic example given is a customer accepting a quote in a CRM system.
Right.
Which then automatically requires a sales order to be created in an ERP system.
Connecting the dots.
Exactly. The information flow can be unidirectional or bidirectional, often near real time, handling single messages to ensure transactional integrity.
Okay.
A special feature is its support for B2B or business to government scenarios. This means it can facilitate processes that cross company boundaries.
Ah, integrating with partners.
Yes, for example, saving an order for transfer directly to a supplier. Integrating disparate partners into a unified workflow. This is really about automating and streamlining your core business operations.
And data-oriented integration. This sounds like it's about moving larger chunks of information, maybe for analytics or reporting.
Precisely. Its primary tag is data synchronization or replication.
Okay.
Triggers can be scheduled jobs, for instance, a daily transfer of all new customer records or real-time changes, where data is replicated as soon as it changes.
Bulk data movement.
Right. It typically deals with bulk messages rather than single transactions and often involves complex transformations.
Why complex?
Well, this is crucial because data structures optimized for transactional systems, like an ERP, are often very different from those optimized for analytical applications, like a data warehouse.
Right. Different purposes.
Exactly. Data quality and the ability to process big data are critical here. And sometimes it even requires temporary data storage during the transformation process to ensure accuracy and efficiency. Think of it as the plumbing for your business intelligence.
Then there's the integration of user interfaces, UIs. This sounds like making everything look and feel consistent for the end user, no matter how many systems are behind the scenes.
That's the goal. This style specifically focuses on integrating UIs to provide a single, unified user experience across multiple applications.
Okay.
The trigger is always a user action, and the expectation is a real-time reaction.
Like what?
Think about loading input help in a form field, or maybe pulling up additional list information based on a selection the user makes.
Ah, okay, interactive stuff.
Yes, it handles single messages, and security aspects like robust user management and device management are particularly relevant here. The goal is to make it feel like one seamless application for the user, even if multiple disparate systems are working in the background. It's about enhancing that user journey.
And the integration of things. This immediately makes me think of IoT sensors and devices out in the real world.
You got it. It is indeed. This style integrates information from the real world primarily from sensors and devices.
Okay.
The trigger is an event in the thing itself. Perhaps a temperature sensor exceeding a threshold, a machine indicating a maintenance need, or maybe a truck entering a geofenced area.
Real-world events triggering digital actions.
Exactly. The information flow is typically unidirectional and real-time. While broader IoT scenarios often feed into process or data integration streams, this style specifically addresses the direct integration of that raw sensor data.
Bringing the physical world online.
Right, bringing real-world events into the digital enterprise landscape for immediate action or analysis. It's about sensing and responding in real time.
Finally, cross-style integration. This sounds like it bridges the others or handles more complex hybrid scenarios.
It's kind of a pragmatic category, really, for scenarios that combine elements of multiple styles or involve additional management layers.
Like API management.
API managed integration is a prime example, yes. Here, an API management layer is interposed between the service provider and the caller.
Okay.
This layer provides centralized management, enforces security policies, and offers detailed monitoring and analytics for all API consumption, regardless of the underlying integration style. It's like your control tower for APIs. Event-based integration also often falls here. This is where messages are triggered not for specific recipients, but for a pool of interested applications, often via topics.
Publish, subscribe.
Exactly. Publish, subscribe. This provides a flexible, decoupled way for many systems to react to a single event without needing direct point-to-point connections. It's about building a responsive, event-driven enterprise.
Okay, so we've covered the architectural patterns and the styles of integration. Now let's talk about the specific languages and methods systems use to communicate. The source dives into several, starting with SOP. What is SOP and when is it typically used?
Right. SOAP, or Simple Object Access Protocol, is a protocol for exchanging structured information between distributed systems.
Okay, structured info.
Yes, it's XML-based, and it enables remote procedure calls, where one program can request a service from another program located on a different computer on a network.
Got it.
What's important to remember is that SOAP communication is generally stateless over HTTP.
Stateless, meaning?
Meaning each request is completely independent. It contains all the information needed for processing. The server doesn't remember anything about your previous interaction.
Ah, like a vending machine transaction.
Exactly like that. Each transaction is self-contained. This design choice makes it incredibly scalable and resilient.
Okay.
While it's often associated with service-oriented architectures, it provides a very defined contract for services. This makes it robust for complex enterprise-level integrations where strict adherence to data structures is paramount.
So it's for when you need a formal, rigid contract between systems.
That's a good way to think about it, yes.
And then there's RESTful services, which often gets compared to SOAP. What's the key difference and why has REST become so popular, especially for web and cloud stuff?
Right. REST, or Representational State Transfer, is more of an architectural style than a protocol, unlike SOP.
Okay, a style, not a protocol.
Yeah. It focuses on controlling individual identifiable resources using standard HTTP methods. You know, get to retrieve data, put to update, post to create, and delete to remove.
The standard web verbs.
Exactly. Unlike SOAP, which defines specific operations and business logic within its messages, REST is more resource-oriented. The focus is on the data objects themselves and the actions you perform on those objects.
Mm-hmm.
Key principles include statelessness, which we just discussed, client-server separation, cacheability, allowing clients to store responses to reduce server load.
That's important for performance.
Very. And a multi-layered approach where processing details are abstracted. Its simplicity and the fact that it leverages existing HTTP infrastructure make it highly efficient and scalable for web-based interactions.
So less about the process and more about the data object itself. That distinction sounds key.
Exactly. And OData, or Open Data Protocol, is built on top of REST.
ODA.
It provides a standardized way to create and consume RESTful APIs, making it even easier to expose and consume data consistently.
Standardization on top of REST.
Right. OData services are well-suited for lightweight web interfaces, and they leverage those same HTTP operations, PDAT post delete for specific resource control. A major benefit is low data overhead, often due to built-in filtering and querying capabilities.
So you only get the data you need.
Precisely. It lets you retrieve only the data you need from a larger data set. It essentially brings a standard query language to REST APIs, making them more discoverable and consumable, especially for front-end developers.
Let's talk about the classic SAP-specific methods, remote function calls or RFCs and IDOCs. These seem foundational.
They are. remote function calls, or RFCs, are SAP's implementation of remote procedure calls.
Okay.
Despite the advent of more modern web services and OData, RFCs are still widely used for integration in SAP environments.
Really? Why is that?
Because they are deeply embedded in SAP's core applications and provide direct access to SAP business logic. They allow a client program to call a procedure on a server program, even if it's on a different computer.
Direct access to the core.
Right. SAP provides SAP connectors, like the SAP Java connector or the SAP connector for Microsoft.NET, to enable RFC communication between SAP and non-SAP systems, bridging the gap.
Got it.
They are robust, synchronous, and performant for direct, real-time calls into SAP logic.
And iDocs, how do they fit in, given their long history? Still relevant for new projects.
Well, iDocs are structured messages used primarily for asynchronous data exchange. They're particularly important for B2B scenarios, sending documents like purchase orders or invoices to external partners.
Asynchronous and B2B.
Okay. They were first introduced with SAP R3, and the guide mentions new iDoc types have been introduced over time, which shows their continued relevance and adaptability.
Keep evolving?
They do. They provide a robust, standardized way to exchange business documents between disparate systems, even across company boundaries, ensuring transactional integrity. While newer technologies exist for established B2B integrations, iDocs remain a real workhorse due to their reliability and deep integration with SAP's core business processes.
Okay, so beyond direct calls and structured documents, how do systems handle asynchronous communication or very large data volumes? Where the sender doesn't need an immediate response, what about reliability and decoupling?
That's where message queues become crucial. For asynchronous message delivery.
Message queues.
Instead of direct, real-time transmission, messages are placed in a queue for the receiver to pick up later. This fire-and-forget scenario fundamentally decouples sender and receiver.
Decoupling is key there.
It is. It means the sender doesn't have to wait for the receiver to be ready, which significantly improves system resilience and overall performance.
Like dropping a letter in the mail.
Exactly like that analogy. You send it, you know we'll get there eventually, but you don't wait on the line. While Java Message Service, or JMS, was prominent for a long time.
Yeah, I remember JMS.
There was a demand for programming language-independent protocols. This led to the rise of AMQP, the Advanced Message Queuing Protocol for General Application Integration.
AMQP.
And MQTT, Message Queuing Telemetry Transport, specifically designed for lightweight IoT scenarios, facilitating communication with many devices over potentially unreliable networks.
Got it. AMQP for apps, MQTT for things?
Generally speaking, yes.
And what about good old file transfers? Still relevant in this age of APIs and real-time messaging, or are they a relic?
Oh, definitely still relevant.
Really?
Yeah. While often seen as a simpler, maybe almost primitive method, file transfers remain widely used, especially for very large volumes of data where real-time message-by-message integration might be inefficient or just overkill.
For the big batch jobs.
Exactly. They can be shared at the operating system level or via protocols like FTP or SFTP. The simplicity of configuration and the ability to use existing IT infrastructure are significant advantages.
Right.
However, it's not without its quirks. I mean, you hear stories of companies losing days debugging a single missing comma in a flat file.
Oh, yeah. Been there.
Or challenges accessing specific directories for testing. Coordinating the transfer and processing can require additional oversight. But for bulk data movement, it's still a workhorse, especially for batch processes.
Okay, so with all these different architectures, styles, technologies, how does SSE bring it all together into a cohesive strategy for the modern enterprise? This sounds like where the hybrid integration platform, or HIP, comes in.
That's exactly it, HIP.
What exactly is a HIP, and why do companies need one now more than ever?
So a hybrid integration platform is designed to address the increasing complexity of modern IT landscapes, which, as we've said, typically include both traditional on-premise systems and a growing number of cloud-based applications.
The hybrid reality.
The hybrid reality. It's not a single tool, importantly, but rather a strategic concept. It encompasses functional, technical, organizational, and operational dimensions.
Okay, a framework.
Yes, it provides a unified framework to manage all these disparate integration needs. The critical insight here is that the modern enterprise is inherently hybrid, and you need a platform that can seamlessly bridge these worlds.
Why is a HIP so essential now? What specific problems does it solve for businesses grappling with this hybrid reality?
Well, companies need HIPs for several compelling reasons. First, they dramatically simplify the integration of new cloud applications into existing, often complex on-premise processes.
Like connecting Salesforce to SAP.
Exactly that kind of scenario.
Yeah.
Second, they offer comprehensive support for both process integration, where business flows span multiple systems, and data integration for syncing and replicating large data sets.
Covers both styles.
Right. Third, HIPs enable event-driven architectures, which are becoming increasingly common in cloud applications, allowing systems to react asynchronously to business events.
More responsive.
Yes. Fourth, they facilitate the use of prepackaged integration content, like pre-built Salesforce integration content within SAP Integration Suite, which accelerates deployment and reduces development effort.
Ready-made connections.
Kind of. Finally, AHIP helps organizations meet maturity model criteria for integration and, critically, provides a central platform for managing and monitoring all integration activities.
The single view.
Yes, giving a holistic view of data flow and system health across the entire enterprise. It's really about achieving enterprise-wide connectivity and transparency.
The source tells us SAP calls its own AHIP solution the SAP Integration Suite. What's their vision for it? How does it aim to solve these hybrid integration challenges, specifically within the SAP ecosystem and beyond?
SAP envisions the Integration Suite as their unified platform for mapping all hybrid integration requirements. Their goal is harmonization across solutions.
Harmonization.
Meaning offering an out-of-the-box integration experience. The idea is that cross-application business processes should work seamlessly from day one without requiring individual interface development for each customer.
Ambitious goal.
It is. It also strongly supports open integration, allowing for easy and standardized integration with customer-specific and third-party applications.
Connecting to non-SAP stuff, too.
Absolutely. This suite is SAP's strategic successor to older on-premise platforms like SAP Process Integration or Process Orchestration PyIPO.
Right, PyIPO retirement.
Exactly, which are set to be retired by 2030. This marks a clear strategic shift towards cloud-centric integration. The message is clear. The future of SAP integration is in the cloud with this suite.
Let's look at some of the major tools within this suite then, starting with SAP Process Orchestration, PO. It's been a workhorse for many companies. What are its core strengths and what's its role today given the cloud shift?
Right. SAP Process Orchestration, or PO, is SAP's robust on-premise middleware platform. It's been critical for complex process-based integration, particularly for on-premise to on-premise scenarios.
On-prem to on-prem.
Yes, and sophisticated B2B communication, often enhanced via specialized add-ons for things like EDI. PO offers powerful capabilities like advanced data transformation using XSLT or Java mappings, sophisticated message routing to single or multiple recipients, with flexible error handling and robust message composition. It also ensures message persistence for reliability and provides comprehensive monitoring tools like the component monitor and message monitor.
So still powerful.
Very. While SAP is shifting focus to SAP cloud integration, the option to run cloud integration interfaces on PO exists explicitly for migration purposes.
Ah, as a bridge.
Exactly, highlighting its ongoing, albeit transitional, importance. Mm. Its strategic relevance today often lies in its role as a bridge for migration, as SAP steers customers towards cloud-first solutions.
Next, SAP Cloud Integration, or CPI. This seems to be the flagship, the future for SAP's integration strategy. What makes it stand out as a cloud-based solution? What flexibility does it offer?
SAP Cloud Integration, CPI, is SAP's cloud-based integration platform as a service, or I+. Its central component is the iFlow, which defines the protocols and transformation steps for messages flowing between applications. CPI is highly versatile. It supports various internet protocols and adapters and integrates with EDI standards via the Integration Advisor Service.
Okay.
It offers key capabilities like message persistence for runtime or analytical purposes, robust data security through encryption decryption, and flexible message processing, which can be event-based or scheduled.
Flexible triggers.
Yes. It also boasts a wide array of predefined adapters for both SAP and non-SAP applications, making it incredibly plug-and-play for common scenarios.
Speaks things up.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And crucially, CPI allows for the extension of standard integration content via user exits or content-enricher artifacts.
Customization points.
Right. Enabling custom field mappings or data enrichment from other systems, providing that crucial last-mile customization unique to a business. This is really where the bulk of new SAP integration development is happening now.
APIs are everywhere in modern IT, driving digital transformation. So SAP API management must be critical for controlling and leveraging these interfaces. How does it fit in?
Absolutely critical. SAP API management is key for enabling digital transformation and managing distributed application landscapes. It's a comprehensive process for creating, publishing, and governing APIs.
Governance is key.
Yes. Defining execution policies, setting access restrictions. It consists of a gateway for execution, publishing tools for developers, and a developer portal where API consumers can discover and test APIs.
The whole lifecycle.
Pretty much. It manages APIs regardless of whether they're SOAP, REST, or OData, providing crucial functions like API design, versioning control, robust security, real-time monitoring, and in-depth analytics on API usage.
Okay.
This allows organizations to centrally manage all provided services and apply granular access control, ensuring strong governance over how APIs are consumed and utilized across the entire digital ecosystem. It's your single pane of glass for all API traffic, internal or external.
An event-driven architecture is a big trend for building responsive, decoupled systems. How does SAP Event Mesh fit into that vision, enabling applications to react instantly?
SAP Event Mesh provides a central event broker. It allows applications to communicate via events rather than direct, tightly coupled calls.
The broker model.
Right. It uses a publish-subscribe principle. Applications publish messages to topics or send into queues. Any application interested in that topic or queue can subscribe to it and receive the message.
Loose coupling again.
Very much so. This enables highly asynchronous communication, fundamentally decoupling applications and providing significant flexibility. Use cases include distributing messages to multiple receivers without direct addressing.
Like the sales order example.
Exactly. Notifying various interested systems, logistics, CRM, billing simultaneously about a new sales order, ensuring all relevant parties are immediately aware of the change. It's all about real-time responsiveness and agility.
What about connecting to non-SAP cloud applications? Many businesses use a diverse set of tools, Salesforce, Jira, HubSpot alongside SAP. That can be a huge integration headache.
It really can be. And that's where Open Connectors come in as a real game changer.
Open Connectors.
Yes. They provide a standardized, simplified way to connect to hundreds of non-SAP cloud applications like Salesforce, Jira, HubSpot, many others, by harmonizing their native APIs.
Harmonizing APIs? How?
They support various authentication methods, offer standardized adapters, unify event notifications, whether through polling or webhooks, and harmonize error handling across these disparate systems.
So it simplifies dealing with all those different APIs.
Precisely. This prevents a clustering of interfaces via different platforms by centralizing third-party integrations. It allows businesses to manage diverse cloud landscapes more efficiently through a single consistent approach. It's like having one translator for hundreds of different SaaS applications.
And beyond just real-time messages for processes, what tools does SAP offer for moving and transforming large data sets? Perhaps for analytics, data warehousing, machine learning? Sounds like a complex landscape itself.
You're right. Data integration has its own specialized toolkit. It's quite comprehensive. The guide covers a suite of tools, each with a specific purpose.
Okay, let's break them down.
For comprehensive data orchestration and governance, including machine learning model creation and deployment, you have SAP Data Intelligence.
Data Intelligence, okay.
It integrates deeply with ABA applications and other SAP BDP services, positioning it as a central hub for intelligent data management.
Got it. What else?
For classic batch ETL extract, transform, load for extracting, transforming, and loading large data sets, there's SAP Data Services, often used for large data set migrations or ongoing bulk data movement.
The traditional ETL tool.
Right. Then for real-time data replication, specifically from SAP systems or other databases to SAP HA Now, SAP Landscape Transformation Replication Server, SLT, is your go-to.
SLT for real-time to HA Now.
Correct. It ensures your SAP Enchiada database is always up to date with transactional data.
Okay.
As part of the SAP L platform itself, there's SAP HA Smart Data Integration, SDI. This enables both traditional job-based batch processing and real-time integration directly within SAP HAN, leveraging the power of the in-memory database.
Integration inside EHA.
Uh-huh. And for cloud-based ETL with an on-premise agent, supporting both data replication and data virtualization, reading data on demand without storing it, there's SAP Cloud Integration for Data Services.
Cloud ETL with virtualization option.
Exactly. Each of these tools excels in its niche, collectively highlighting SAP's very comprehensive approach to moving, transforming, and managing enterprise data for pretty much any scenario you can think of.
Finally, let's talk about monitoring and managing these interfaces in real time once they're up and running. It sounds like a massive undertaking to keep track of it all.
It can be. And that's precisely the realm of SAP Application Interface Framework, or AIF.
AIF, okay.
AIF helps you manage interfaces at the business level. Critically, it enables business users to monitor interfaces and handle errors without requiring constant IT intervention.
Empowering the business user.
Exactly. It provides functions for message monitoring, accessible in both the old SAP GUI and modern Fiori apps, and sophisticated error handling, including alerts sent via email, SAP Alert Notification Service, or SAP Workflow Management.
Okay.
It even has an interface builder for designing interface logic, including mappings, checks, actions. AIF is specifically designed to shift some of the operational burden from IT departments to business departments.
Why is that important?
Because the business users are often best equipped to assess and resolve application-specific errors, like a locked posting period in finance. They understand the business context.
That makes sense.
It empowers the business, making them an active part of the solution and speeding up problem resolution.
Okay, this deep dive has shown us just how many moving parts there are in an integrated SAP landscape. All these tools, architectures, how do companies bring order to this staggering complexity? It sounds like you need strategic methods and robust frameworks, not just technology.
Absolutely. The guide really emphasizes that this inherent complexity demands a structured approach. You need it to increase integration maturity within an organization.
Integration maturity.
Yes. Yeah. Without it, organizations risk a chaotic, unmanageable landscape that slows down innovation and becomes a constant source of problems. It's about creating a repeatable, reliable process.
The Integration Solution Advisory Methodology, or ISAM, seems like a central methodology here. What is it, and how does it help organizations navigate this intricate integration maze?
ISAM provides a structured framework for defining a comprehensive integration strategy.
Okay, a framework.
It guides you through distinct phases, starting with assess current state, which often involves using maturity models to understand your existing capabilities. Then it progresses to design your hybrid integration platform, where the organization assigns specific technologies to use cases and evaluates various solutions.
Mm-hmm.
ISM works with well-defined concepts like integration domains, like on-premise to cloud scenarios, integration styles, which we discussed earlier, and use cases, such as master data integration or building a digital integration hub.
Okay.
The critical takeaway is that it's not about picking shiny new tools first. It's about understanding your needs, assessing your current state, and then strategically selecting the right technology.
And it helps with technology selection. That sounds like a huge challenge given all the options we just discussed.
Yes, definitely. ISM incorporates technology mapping to assign potential technologies to specific use cases.
Okay.
This is often done via decision matrices that recommend preferred tools. For instance, suggesting SAP Cloud integration for hybrid requirements or SAP process orchestration for on-premise B2B scenarios.
Guiding the choice.
Exactly. It also guides the creation of architecture blueprints for different integration types, providing best practices and predefined structures to streamline development. This systematic approach helps prevent ad hoc tool selection and fosters a more cohesive and less heterogeneous integration landscape.
Saves time and money long term.
Absolutely.
The guide talks about maturity models. How do these help an organization understand where they stand with integration and what path they need to take to improve?
Maturity models help assess an organization's current integration capabilities and pinpoint specific areas for improvement.
Like a benchmark.
Sort of, yes. The guide references models ranging from level zero on request, which signifies ad hoc, unstructured, reactive integration, to higher levels that denote increasingly structured, standardized, and proactively managed integration capabilities.
Okay, a ladder to climb.
Right. The process typically involves assessing the current IT maturity, deriving actionable areas for improvement, and then setting a target maturity level to strive for. It's a way to benchmark and strategize your integration journey, giving you a clear pathway to better, more efficient operations.
If integration is so critical, it sounds like you need a dedicated team or structure to manage it centrally, beyond just individual developers. Is that what an Integration Competency Center, or ICC, is?
Precisely. Integration Competency Centers, or ICCs, are organizational units specifically designed to manage and standardize integration activities across the company.
A central hub for integration.
Yes. The guide describes various models for ICCs, including the shared services model, which is more decentralized, with the central team providing specialized services to other departments.
Okay.
And the central services model, which centralizes all integration management, typically better suited for small to medium-sized companies. And ICC bundles all necessary skills trainers, architects, developers, project managers, administrators to manage integration holistically, covering the entire life cycle from requirements gathering and development to ongoing operations.
The whole spectrum.
Right. SAP even recommends defining ICCs by integration style or by specific product solution, acknowledging the diverse needs within an enterprise. It's about creating a unified expert capability that ensures consistent, high-quality integration across the board.
Beyond just the team, you need clear rules and principles to guide all this complex activity. That's where governance comes in, right? Ensuring everyone is working towards the same goals.
Yes, exactly. Governance establishes integration-relevant rules and measures to standardize the approach to interface development and operations.
Standardization again.
Yes. The ultimate aim is to achieve higher quality interfaces and a more consistent, manageable integration landscape. Key aspects include...
What are they?
Architecture and integration principles. These serve as guardrails for future alignment, derived directly from the company's broader business or IT vision.
High-level rules.
Right. Examples given are managed interfaces, promoting oversight, API-first, emphasizing discoverable, reusable services, optimal platform selecting the right tool, and reuse encouraging existing solutions. They help avoid fragmentation and foster standardization.
Okay. What else?
Integration policies. These are more concrete rules that specify how specific integration scenarios should be implemented. An example cited is messages are only published to topics, which has clear implications, like consumers being responsible for message processing and a justification around decoupling.
More specific guidelines.
Correct. And decision matrices. These are practical tools for integration developers, helping them choose the preferred technology for a given use case based on defined criteria. This leads to less heterogeneity in the landscape, ensuring similar applications are integrated in similar ways.
Reduces complexity down the line.
That's the idea. Reducing future maintenance burdens.
So it's about making sure everyone is singing from the same hymn sheet, technically and operationally, preventing chaos as interfaces grow and ensuring long-term maintainability.
Absolutely. And crucially, this isn't a one-time thing.
Right, needs updating.
Exactly. The guide stresses the importance of regular reviews and updates of these strategies because the technology landscape and business needs are constantly evolving. Governance is an ongoing process of adaptation and refinement, a living document for your integration journey.
And beyond the high-level principles, what about the day-to-day development? What kind of development guidelines help ensure consistency and quality on the ground for the actual builders?
Development guidelines are crucial for passing on practical experience and establishing best practices for interface developers and architects. They cover several key aspects.
Such as?
Standardization. Especially for A2A, application-application interfaces. This is achieved through matching protocols, consistent data models like the SAP One Domain Model, or leveraging existing integration content. Middleware often plays a critical role here.
How so?
Handling message format and content conversion so that individual applications don't need to speak every language.
Yeah, the middleware translates.
Right. Another key aspect is loose coupling. This is a critical factor for interface quality. Applications should not be too tightly dependent on each other.
Avoids brittle systems.
Exactly. Tight coupling makes systems brittle and hard to change. Decoupling can be achieved through asynchronous communication, data separation, or using canonical data models. The goal is to build resilient systems that can evolve independently.
Makes sense. What else?
Documentation. This is essential, not just for compliance, like auditors checking for encrypted protocols like HTTPS SSL, but also for future maintenance and troubleshooting.
Can't underestimate good docs.
Never. Interface requirements should be meticulously captured in forms, detailing what information is sent, where it goes, when, and in which business process. Good documentation is the bedrock of a maintainable integration landscape, ensuring knowledge transfer and reducing technical debt.
Okay, if you have so many interfaces, potentially thousands across an enterprise, how do you even begin to keep track of them all? An interface catalog sounds absolutely essential.
It is indeed. An interface catalog or interface list serves as a comprehensive inventory describing a company's entire integration landscape.
The master list.
Pretty much. It's invaluable when major changes occur in the IT landscape. Significant mergers or acquisitions, substantial system migrations, like moving SAP systems to SAP HEN Enterprise Cloud.
Right.
In these scenarios, the catalog helps identify precisely which interfaces need adaptation, preventing critical disruptions and unexpected downtime. It's your single source of truth for all connections.
What kind of details would you find in such a catalog? Is it just basic names or more comprehensive?
Oh, far more comprehensive. It should meticulously document all interfaces, regardless of the underlying technology, point-to-point, or mediated via middleware.
Okay.
For SAP Cloud integration, for example, it would capture landscape-dependent values like host names, IP addresses, user credentials as externalized parameters, making them easier to manage. For SAP API management, it's crucial to document details that might be hidden within policies. The ultimate goal is to enable answers to critical operational questions. Which systems interact? Which runtime is used? Which protocols? How are messages distributed?
The who, what, where, how.
Exactly. The guide even shows an example of a generated catalog listing detailed sender-receiver relationships, including mapping and routing rules. A comprehensive, actionable overview.
Once you have that comprehensive inventory, how do you know if your interfaces are actually performing well? Reporting seems key here to understand the real-time health and efficiency.
Reporting provides vital transparency on interface runtime behaviors, including the number of messages processed, their size, and, crucially, their processing speed.
Not just volume, but speed, too.
Right. This isn't just about hardware sizing. More importantly, it provides direct information about the quality and efficiency of your interfaces. It helps you quickly identify errors, performance bottlenecks, and areas for optimization before they become major problems.
Catching issues early.
Yes. Without it, you're flying blind.
What kind of insights can you get from this reporting? Where do problems typically show up? How does this data inform strategy?
You can gain insights into message volumes broken down by business area, finance, logistics, etc., helping you pinpoint where data flows are heaviest or where errors might be occurring due to faulty data or maybe overly complex routings.
Finding the hotspots?
Right. Reporting highlights slow interfaces and helps determine whether the bottleneck lies in the data mapping process itself or perhaps in the transmission time.
Mapping versus network.
Exactly. The guide describes component-specific reporting capabilities, too.
Ooh, like what?
For SAP process orchestration, there's a performance monitor called PIOM. It provides aggregated daily values per server node, accessible via an API.
PIM for PIOM.
Oh, okay. SAP Cloud Integration offers a message processing dashboard, often visualized in SAP Analytics Cloud, providing graphical overviews of message runtime based on processing logs.
CPI dashboards.
And SAP API Management provides API analytics, showing overall API performance and traffic, how often APIs were called, allowing for detailed analysis of API consumption and health.
Got it. So multi-layered reporting.
Yes. Giving a comprehensive view of integration performance, allowing teams to proactively address issues and optimize the flow of critical business data.
So we've designed and built these interfaces. We're monitoring them. What about keeping them running smoothly day to day and adapting them over time? This is where operations comes in. Alerts, changes, stability.
Yes, operations is about active monitoring, triggering alerts when errors occur, and robustly managing changes to the interfaces.
Let's break that down, monitoring and alerting.
Right. Monitoring involves actively checking the health of interfaces, often through dedicated user interfaces that provide real-time status. Alerting sends notifications email, SAT Alert Notification Service, to relevant users or teams in case of errors.
Letting the right people know.
Exactly. The guide clarifies various interface functionalities that need monitoring: communication, buffering, serialization, routing, mapping, conversion, correlation, interaction. It's quite detailed.
Mm-hmm.
For SAP Cloud integration, SAP manages platform monitoring, but you, the customer, are responsible for application-level monitoring.
Shared responsibility.
Yes. And cross-system monitoring solutions like SAP Focused Run and SAP Cloud ALM for operations provide crucial end-to-end visibility across your entire landscape.
Okay, now test management. This sounds critical. How do you ensure changes or updates don't inadvertently break existing interfaces? That seems like a constant worry.
It is, and that's the absolutely critical role of testing. The guide discusses different types of tests.
Okay.
Unit tests for individual components like connectivity and mappings done during development, and integration tests, which check the totality of components working together across systems.
Unit versus integration.
Right. These fit into agile testing quadrants, distinguishing between technology-facing tests that support development and business-facing tests that critique the system's fitness for purpose. Ensures both technical correctness and business relevance.
And are there specific SAP tools for this beyond just manual testing to automate this?
Yes. SAP Solution Manager offers a comprehensive test suite and EKTs, extended computer-aided test tools, for automated testing within SAP systems.
EKTs.
EKTs can act as both senders and receivers, simulating end-to-end scenarios. The guide also mentions SAP's strategic partnership with Tricentis, providing automated testing for non-SAP solutions like Salesforce.
Extending testing beyond SAP.
Exactly, across the heterogeneous landscape.
What about partner solutions for testing? Are there specialized tools for SAP integration testing?
Yes, several partners offer highly specialized tools. NT4 IFTT is a notable one for automating regression testing, specifically for SAP interfaces. Invaluable after system updates or when introducing DevOps.
NT4 IFTT.
Another is FIGAF DevOps tool, which supports continuous testing and even the virtual creation of systems and development landscapes, providing rapid feedback to developers.
Okay.
These tools aim to automate repetitive and time-consuming testing efforts, ensuring interface stability with speed and efficiency.
Now, change in transport management. How do you manage the entire life cycle of an interface change, from a new requirement all the way to production deployment? Sounds like a tightly controlled process.
It needs to be. The guide outlines a structured 6-phase change management cycle: recording the request, implementation, transport, dev to QA, testing, another transport, QA to prod, and finally, deployment.
The standard flow.
Right. The inherent challenge, though, is that changes often involve multiple applications and systems, not just the integration middleware.
Yeah, dependencies.
Exactly. SAP offers change request management, ChargeAir, as part of SAP Solution Manager to organize these requests and, crucially, to synchronize transports across all involved components.
Charm for synchronization.
Yes, ensuring that all dependent systems are updated consistently and simultaneously. This prevents system mismatches and outages.
And versioning is also critical here, right? Especially with APIs.
Absolutely. When incompatible changes are made to an interface, new versions are typically created to avoid breaking existing consumers.
Keep the old ones running.
Right. SAP API Management, for example, inherently handles API versioning, allowing different applications to consume different versions of an API safely. The guide also highlights the importance of Git for versioning source code.
Git for code versioning.
And integrating with continuous integration, continuous delivery, CI/CD processes. These automate the build, test, and deployment of software changes, ensuring interface changes are managed systematically and efficiently from code commit to production. It's all about controlled, agile evolution.
Okay, finally, let's talk about the people and the organizational structure. How do organizations need to adapt to handle modern integration challenges, especially with cloud and agile methodologies like DevOps?
The guide emphasizes the shift towards product-oriented agile cultures, particularly through the adoption of DevOps. It's about fundamentally changing how teams are structured and how they collaborate, moving away from those siloed development and operations teams.
What exactly is DevOps in this context? How does it apply to integration? Sounds like more than just a buzzword.
It is. DevOps describes an approach for improving collaboration between software development and IT operations, forming interdisciplinary teams that aim for optimized product quality, customer orientation, and speed in delivering new functionalities.
Breaking down silos.
Exactly. It moves away from...
So how does a dedicated integration team fit into this agile DevOps-oriented structure? Do they still exist separately, or do they dissolve into product teams?
The guide suggests that integration should indeed remain a functional group within IT, but their role shifts.
Just how?
They act as an enabler for these agile product teams. Their central task is to offer the integration platforms and define the essential standards, predefined interfaces, APIs that product teams can then consume to build their applications.
Providing the platform and guardrails?
Right. This allows product teams to move fast with their own development, while the integration team ensures consistency, governance, and overall platform health and reliability across the enterprise. They become the integration backbone providers.
What roles are critical in these modern integration teams? Sounds like you need a diverse skill set.
You definitely do. Key roles include the integration architect, who defines the strategy, principles, technology selection, the visionary.
Architect. Okay.
The integration expert, possessing deep technical knowledge across technologies and tools. The technical guru. The interface developer. The hands-on role, implementing the actual interfaces. The builder.
Developer.
The application developer, who consumes the APIs and extends applications, often from within the product teams, the consumer.
App developer.
Technical and process experts, providing crucial business and functional context, the business translators.
Business context experts.
And the project lead manager, overseeing integration projects, ensuring they stay on track, the coordinator. It's a blend of strategic, deep technical, and strong business-focused roles working together.
And how are responsibilities assigned within such dynamic teams? You need clarity on who does what.
Absolutely. The guide advocates for using a RICI matrix, you know, responsible, accountable, consulted, informed.
RICI, okay.
To clearly define responsibilities for various integration management activities across different roles. This applies in both project and operating contexts.
Can you give an example?
Sure. In the change management process, an application developer might be responsible for creating a change request for an interface, while the integration architect is accountable for its qualification, according to ISAM, ensuring it aligns with architectural principles.
Clear roles.
Yes. This clarity is vital to avoid confusion and ensure accountability in a complex, multi-team environment, ensuring projects move forward efficiently and consistently.
Okay, this has been an incredibly comprehensive look at SAP interface management. It's clear integration is not just technical, but a strategic imperative. What's on the horizon? What's next for integration in the SAP world?
Well, the guide concludes with several forward-looking trends that will likely shape the integration landscape.
What should we look out for?
Continued importance of hybrid architectures. That mix of on-premise and cloud systems isn't going away anytime soon.
Hybrid is here to stay.
It seems so. This reinforces the enduring need for robust hybrid integration platforms that can seamlessly connect both worlds, handling everything from legacy ERPs to cutting-edge cloud SaaS solutions.
Okay, what else?
Growing significance of integration of things. As digitalization advances and IoT becomes more pervasive across industries, integrating real-world sensor data via event-based communication will become increasingly vital.
More IoT integration?
Yes, for businesses to gain real-time insights and automate operations. Think smart factories, connected supply chains.
Makes sense.
Also, the rise of self-service integration. While it's challenging today, the demand for non-experts business users, for example, to be able to implement interfaces with minimal IT intervention will grow.
Business users building interfaces.
That's the vision. However, the guide notes it's still likely a few years away for most companies to truly achieve widespread self-service integration. It requires significant underlying standardization and simplification first.
A longer-term trend.
Seems so. Also, further development of SAP Integration Suite. SAP will continue to prioritize enhancing its integration suite as the central platform for all integration needs, emphasizing harmonization and providing more prepackaged content.
Doubling down on the suite.
Yes, that's their strategic North Star for integration. And finally, digital integration hubs as a strategy.
Digital integration hubs.
The concept of a digital integration hub, which centralizes data and exposes it via APIs for consumption by various applications and channels, will likely gain further traction as a key part of broader integration strategies, enabling more agile and responsive business models. It's about creating a single, easy-to-access data layer for your digital initiatives.
Okay, well, that was a truly deep dive into SAP interface management. We've covered everything from foundational concepts and architectural styles to the nitty-gritty of technologies like ESO and REST and the critical methods for governing and operating these complex landscapes.
A lot of ground covered.
Yeah, and we also saw how organizational models like DevOps are shaping the future of integration teams and their role within the modern enterprise.
The journey from simple point-to-point connections to sophisticated hybrid integration platforms and event-driven architectures really highlights the constant evolution required, keeping businesses connected in the digital age. It's about moving from, you know, a patchwork of connections to a strategically managed and robust integration fabric that truly enables digital business and innovation.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, whether you're grappling with legacy systems, embracing new cloud applications, or just curious about how global enterprises connect their digital dots? Understanding these principles is key.
Absolutely.
It's not just about IT anymore. It's really about enabling seamless business processes, fostering agility, and driving innovation across the entire organization. And here's a final provocative thought for you to mull over. If the future of integration is truly self-service, as the experts predict, what does that mean for the role of the traditional integration specialist?
Interesting question.
Will their expertise become entirely embedded in the tools, or will they evolve into something entirely new? Perhaps becoming the architects of a future where integration is so intuitive it almost disappears into the fabric of the business itself. Something to consider as you go about your day. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.
How mature is your organization when it comes to integration topics? Find out for free with our Integration Maturity Assessment at wint.co/IMA. That's WHINT.co/IMA. In case you want to take control of your integration landscape to increase transparency and automate your integration quality processes, please schedule a call at wint.co/contact. If you enjoyed the content, please like and subscribe to our podcast. See you next time.